Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Maria DeMars. And this week, we have an amazing group of young people with us. These guys are from Manual Arts High School in Los Angeles, and they won the Youth Leadership Summit as the group that had the best proposal for improving their community. And this is a really amazing thing. They come up with the proposals themselves, they do the budget themselves, and then they go and they present it to a group of professionals who vote on who has the project most likely to succeed. So we're going to have each of them introduce themselves, starting with...
George Campos, thank you for having us.
Hello, my name is Claudia Jorge.
And I am Ethan Troop.
So Ethan, since you are holding the mic right now, just to put you on the spot, tell us a little bit about your project.
So our project is the STEM for Change Initiative, and we actually hope to make it a club. This project hopes to bring science fair projects and STEM showcases into minority communities to hopefully expose them to STEM fields. Because we've noticed that like in our communities, a lot of them don't have the right exposure, so they lack encouragement to eventually pursue these fields in the future. And as a result, we're underrepresented in these fields.
Where did the idea for this project come from? I mean, what was the moment where you said, we need to pursue this?
Well, George came to me, asked me for help. But I guess for me, it was just going into college, and I was too afraid to go into something such as computer science or something having to do with math or science because I felt like I wouldn't be prepared or I didn't know as much as the rest of the people when I go to college would know, simply because I never had the exposure or experience with these fields.
We took a good hard look around and all of us wanted to pursue STEM fields, but we realized that we didn't have these role models, these people that we can look up to in our community. The minority population coming from South LA, we don't have as many individuals pursuing STEM. So we realized that we were lucky enough to have the opportunities to make it there, and we are pursuing STEM fields next year. So we really sat around trying to figure out what is the best way that we can open this up to generations. And we realized, just brainstorming, that it was these exposure, just putting together these science fairs. And really, all we are doing is putting that idea in the back of their head that this is an option, that pursuing science, technology, engineering, math is an option for students like us.
I would say for me, the STEM for Change initiative started at home with my little brother. My little brother actually goes to Normandy Elementary School, and it's actually one of the schools we're working with. I remember I had joined the robotics team my sophomore year. Up to then, I knew I wanted to do STEM because I wanted to become a doctor, but I never knew, okay, so what am I going to major in? Until when I joined the robotics team, I found out about engineering, and I showed my little brother. I took videos, and I showed my little brother about Lego robots, and he was amazed. It's definitely something like little kids aren't exposed to. And I just saw his excitement, and I saw this is something that I would want to do. Of course, these elementary schools don't have science fairs. They're not really exposed to this. So I said to myself, we have to do something. We have to expose these little kids and give them more resources.
So you guys talked a little bit about your project idea. What are the actionable parts of your project? What are you guys doing with this STEM for Change initiative?
It was a really nice idea of what we were going to do, what we wanted, but really implementing it was the issue, the big puzzle. So what we did is we partnered with USC's, their community outreach program. We partnered with our school, the LA's Promise Fund, or a nonprofit organization where it works out of LA, with the Woodcraft Rangers. And really, through a lot of planning, it became this tangible thing where we collect these resources, we gather a group of students, and we put together just individual projects that each person likes. Their science fair, it can be anything from simple volcanoes to talking about the solar system. Really, it just became a way for us to pass this information, that these things that interested us, onto those incoming students.
I guess what it is, it's kind of like your classic science fair that you always see in your movies. We don't have that in our communities. So because of that, we feel like we can take high school students and working or learning in class, and they can give back to the elementary schools or middle schools we may be working with. And we feel like that's something that's tangible and realistic to do, because all it takes is having the right resources to be able to fund these projects that we're doing and taking it right down the street to places right in our community.
I was not aware till this very second that those schools did not have science fairs. And it's one of the things that I actually wrote about on my blog years ago, is the different opportunities that kids have. And there's a lot of talk, oh, these kids should just work harder. And I wrote this blog called Mom, Dad, I Need Help. And my daughter, Julia, was about 11. And her school, which is a private Catholic school in Santa Monica, every student is required to do a science fair project. For years, I forget what grade it started, but she was about sixth grade, and she did a project on whether the viscosity of a solution affects the refraction of light. Now, she was in the sixth grade, and it involved lasers, so that was a big thing. And her dad got online, and he ordered lasers and went to Sur La Table and got something that weighed solutions. So it was like a measuring cup but with a scale on it, and bought all this stuff, partly because he's about as mature as her, and it involved lasers, right? And so then we had a whiteboard. I don't know why we had a whiteboard in our living room, but we did. And so Julia is like pointing the laser at it and measuring where it hits. And then she's talking to her dad, who went to UCLA for a doctorate in particle physics, about, you know, Schnell's law and sine waves and all this stuff. And she's 11. And at every point, she's like, well, Dad, I don't get this. And what's a sine and all that? A sine with the S-I-N-E, of course, you guys know. And I thought, here you repeat that 10,000 times over her childhood and look at the advantage that she has.
Unfortunately, it's easy to assume that we all have the same opportunities and our students just don't take advantage of it. But the issue that we see in our community is that a lot of our students are coming from socially disadvantaged families. A lot of our students have to go home, take care of siblings, work, a lot of them. And it's very difficult to find these same opportunities, right? We understood that because we're coming from this neighborhood, that sitting down with our students and talking to them about science and talking to them about college is a new phenomena that we've started at school. And it's slowly transitioned. As of 6 years ago, our school went through this enormous transition where a lot of the students were essentially kicked out, and we brought in all the community partners. And it really started there at our high school. We can trace it back to 5-6 years ago. My older sister went to that same high school and she didn't graduate. And she has her life together now. She went into community college, finished her GED, but really, it's hard to see what opportunities we lack if you're not in the neighborhood, if you're not in the community. I think what birthed this idea is that we're in it. We went through it and we were lucky enough to meet the right people and connect with the right programs that we were able to get out of there and pursuing pretty great colleges and degrees, that when we took a hard look around, we realized that the opportunities are barely being presented to us. And this is something that an student in the third, fourth, fifth grade has to have his mindset, not ninth, tenth, when we're almost done.
So I have 9 siblings, and so I'm the 4th of the 9 children, and so I've seen 3 others go ahead of me. My oldest brother, he went to manual arts, and he graduated but couldn't go to college because he didn't get his A through Gs. So they allowed him to graduate with the right requirements that would allow him to be competitive or get into a college. My oldest sister went to manual arts as well. She ended up dropping out. Around the 4 to 5 years ago that George was talking about, my brother ahead of me started manual around that same time, and he killed it. He's got the Gates Millennium Scholarship, so he has a full ride for as long as he's in college, and he's going to UC Davis now studying chemical engineering. That started with these community partners coming and UOC Upward Bound Math Science that encouraged him to go into a STEM field, or South Central Scholars, Woodcraft Rangers, all these community partners. I can see a noticeable impact and change that took place just like a couple of years in between.
And then to add on to it, I think it all starts at home too. It all starts with us. We're all seniors here and we're going off to these amazing colleges. And to add on, it begins with us. Because I can see the pattern. I'm not the oldest. My sister, she didn't go to manual arts. She went to Belmont High School. And she actually went to UCLA. But she, being first generation college student, she didn't really know how to navigate. So she dropped out her first year. And now she's in community college. I wanted to say that I am the second in my family. And I'll be, of course, attending UC Berkeley. I can see it in my family that being first generation, like, we didn't have these opportunities. We weren't exposed to these programs. And I guess I would say I'm the start of it. at home, I'm already seeing the college-going community. I can see my little brothers getting excited. When I first got into UCLA, I told my brother, and I was happy about it, but my little brother was freaking out, and this was something new to me. It was amazing to see that my little brother was excited about UCLA.
We've all been through these tough situations, all these obstacles we've faced. Coming into my high school career, I spent a couple of months without a home to live in. And what we realized is, unfortunately, we had to go out of our way to find these opportunities. We had to put in the work, and we had to go find exactly what it is that we were going to do. And we realized that not everyone's going to go out of their way and find it. And because these opportunities are, they're now available, but they're really hidden. They're not pushed towards our students. So this whole idea, the STEM showcase, it came out of that. We want to really put it all together and throw paint on a canvas and see what sticks. And really just making sure that we're throwing all of these opportunities and all these ideas into those little minds of the students and really trying to see if we can convince them to pursue these STEM fields.
Science is pretty awesome. Even people that wouldn't consider themselves nerds, geeks, or whatever, science is just really, really interesting. I found doing something like a STEM showcase or a science fair, whether they feel that they're interested or not, something's going to catch their eye or pique their interest, and that little thing is going to stick in the back of their mind and be like, that's something that I might want to do in the future or look into, or at least just get the exposure to it, I guess it is. Because science, technology, all those movies we're watching, these sci-fi movies, and these detective shows or whatever it may be, it's just really fun. And a lot of us would want to do something like that, but we just feel like we can't. And bringing something like a STEM showcase and showing people that look like us, just a little bit older, like actually studying and researching these things, they're like, wow, I may be able to do something like this.
You guys have hit on something that is really important to emphasize. And the fact is, a lot of times people say, everybody, if they work hard enough, they can do this. And in a lot of cases, it's true. Maybe if you're an extremely motivated individual coming from a lower income community or communities where people aren't expected much to go on, and you are really driven and you look really, really hard for all these opportunities, then you can make things happen. But it's very unfair, and I think people refuse to acknowledge this, or they don't maybe think about it. The fact is, to have to be that driven and focused at third grade or fifth grade or ninth grade, when kids from upper income or middle class communities, they don't have to have that same drive. So it's not this, whether your parents care if you go to school or not, you're the one that has to be driven. But then if you're looking at some of these other kids where their parents are on them, and no, you can't not go to school today, and no, you have to do this, and you have to sit down and study for this class, and you have to do these things. So when people talk about there's this opportunity and everyone has the same opportunity, maybe everyone has the same opportunity, but they don't have the same level of support and resources. And so I think that's really good what you guys are doing and working to say, okay, help kids who maybe aren't going to be the one that sits there and tries and find all of these resources, but know that they're out there.
Yeah, that's a really incredible thing to touch on, because we really have to end up working four times harder to end up at the same place, because nothing is laid out for us. Nothing is put in front of us and given a straight path. This is what you need to do to get to college. And really, that's the challenge. It's not, do we want to do it? Because we all want to do it. We all want to get to college. But it's the fact that each of us has to go out of their way to find their own path to get there. And that idea, in its essence, is what we found was ridiculous. If we can map the path that we took for these incoming students, for these new generation of minority leaders in the world, then we can have them achieve as much as we did and beyond.
I feel like a slacker listening to you guys, because I actually did come from that same kind of environment, and I went to college at 16 because I killed on the SATs. I did not have any long-range plan. I wanted to not be poor. That was my long-range plan. And I know when I got my bachelor's, I was 19, and I got one of my professors said, you should go to graduate school and get an MBA. And I called my grandma, Emilia Maria Castilla, who came here, was briefly in the U.S. and then moved to Canada. But she had gone all the way to the eighth grade. And I used to live with her. And I said, Nanny, what do you think? And she said, what do MBAs do? And I said, I don't know, but they make a lot of money. And she said, well, Mija, you should do that. So this is my career planning. So I kind of feel like I lucked into it, where you guys actually worked your way into it. And yeah, people say, oh, once you got to college, you worked. Yeah, I did. But I didn't do like all the planning that you guys did. But I think one thing that probably is a similarity is when I got to graduate school and I was working on my doctorate, there are two Latino PhD students who were not in the Spanish department, me and Dionisio Salcido. And there was one Latina professor that had a PhD. I think there might have been some people in Spanish, but Flora Ortiz. And I would just go talk to her. And I was not in the same field at all. I was in applied statistics, and she did qualitative research and kind of ethnographic anthropology stuff. But she was there, and that just made such a huge difference. So I'm looking at Claudia thinking about when I started out my career as a female engineer working in aerospace engineering, General Dynamics, and I stood out like pepper in the salt shaker. Even, it's different now, but even in my calculus classes or my Fortran classes, I know nobody does Fortran anymore. Don't laugh at me, Ethan. Yes, I know. I did Fortran 77 when it was new. I swear to God. Yeah, he's like, never heard of it. Punched cards, never saw them either. They have them in a library of tar pits in the museum. So anyway, I'm rambling. But what I wanted to ask Claudia is, how do you feel when you go into a lot of things? I'll bet you're one of the few girls there. You're one of the few Latinas there. Does that bother you? How do you handle it?
I would definitely say I'll be pursuing pre-med. So definitely, I don't see many Latina doctors, I would say, or any Latino doctors. Many, at least I would say. It doesn't make me feel uncomfortable that I'll be one of the only Latinas there, but it just gives me a type of pride that these are my parents' sacrifices too, and I get to represent the Latino culture.
A few weeks ago, I had a reception for all the early admit Harvard students that got in the SoCal area. And really, I didn't know what to expect. I just knew all these kids were probably really smart. And I showed up, and lo and behold, a good number of them are coming from Harvard Westlake private schools. A lot of them are going to these private schools from upper middle class, white, Asian. And really, when I took a good hard look around, there was maybe two or three other Hispanic students out of the 40, 50 that were there. And it is definitely a source of pride to say, oh, wow, got this far. But it's incredibly intimidating. It is.
That's what I was going to say, is just that also this idea of it's on you in a way. If something goes wrong, and we talk about this a lot in tech too, because it's like, well, we've invested in Latinos, we've invested in women. But if something goes wrong, it's like, well, we tried that and it didn't work. It's like, what about all the white guys you invested in and it didn't work? But nobody seems to look at it that way. But there is this kind of, and I don't know if you've felt it yet, or but I'm sure you certainly will, this idea of, because there's not that many of you, you almost have to live up to this other standard that people are putting on it. Because if you fail, it's not just failing for yourself.
I mean, I'm looking at Ethan going to UC Berkeley, want to major in finance. And I'm telling you, you're going to be one of the few African-American dudes in an Armani suit on Wall Street. And I'm sure you'll look good in Armani. But yeah, people will look to you and they will judge. I used to teach at a school in North Dakota. And there was this young man, sexually a minister now, but he, Tyrone Weaver, if you're listening, Tyrone, hi. And he sit in the front. He was majoring in psychology. And anytime I would say something like on an IQ test on differences between whites and African-Americans, everybody would look at him. And finally, one day I said, hey, Tyrone, why does everybody look at you? Are you like making faces behind my back or something? And North Dakota is very white, right? And he says, no, it's like I'm the representative of all the black people in the world.
Where I went to school, it's in South LA. So it's predominantly Hispanic for the schools that I've gone to. So like whenever we'd go over like slavery or talk about African-American history, things like that, I was just kind of the guy there, like, kind of side-eyeing, like, oh, I don't want to say anything offensive, that kind of thing. So I feel like that's kind of, even though there's nothing malicious about what they're doing, it's kind of prepared me for when I do go to college and knowing that I will be one of the few. Just the other week, I was talking to someone, she was like, you know, you're like a unicorn. There's so little African-Americans going to college, and when they do, a lot of them seem to drop out. So it's like, there's almost that bit of pressure, you know, like, oh, if I do this, then that's just another statistic. Or it's discouraging for other people that are looking up to me as a role model. I look at my cousins or my little brothers and sisters. They're like, wow, you know, Ethan, I got accepted to everywhere I applied. They're like, wow, you know, this can be my reality in the future. So, but then if I go and then I fail, then it's like, they look at that like, maybe I shouldn't. Why do I even try? Now I'm just going to be in debt for the rest of my life. So there's almost that pressure. And then also it's kind of like, I'm leaving them. So I'm like, I better succeed because then I left them for no reason.
If it's someone you know, if it's someone you've seen, it really humanizes in a way. And I think the more we have people like that succeeding and going on to college and majoring in these STEM fields and being doctors and economists and stockbrokers, it starts to change people's perspective and they see it as achievable because it's not this mythical, imaginary person or it's not this person that doesn't exist, but it's this person that I know. And I think that really does start to shift people's.
Yeah, I have a cousin named Chris. He's a freshman in high school and he's like super passionate about computer science. He's like doing all this programming and all that, learning all these skills like I wish I would have done when I was his age. But I told him I got accepted to UCLA because that's where he really wants to go. He was just like, what? No way. That's ridiculous. That's crazy. He was like, how did you do it? How is that possible? I'm like, dude, you're smart. You get good grades. You're going to do well on SAT. I know it. He's like, and like, that was just seeing someone like, for someone he's grown up with, shared meals with, someone like, I guess we consider each other equals, respect each other. He's like, this could be my reality of it.
I think, Maria, and you're exactly right, that when it's somebody you know, I know my daughter Rhonda competed in 2 Olympics and people asked her about motivation. She says, you know, my mom won the world championships. It's sort of like, how hard could it be? My mom did it. And Dr. Eric Longy, who's our cultural consultant on Spirit Like the Game and some of the other games, he's the first person from the Spirit Lake Dakota Nation to earn a doctorate. And he was born, raised, grew up, still lives on the reservation. And when we went to the party after he got his PhD, there were a number of moms, grandmas. I saw their kids kind of punch their kid and point over at Eric and say, you're going to be the next one from our reservation that gets a doctorate. So yeah, once you see somebody you know do it, that makes all the difference.
That's the fundamental idea that we wanted to capture when putting together this community service project. Is if you go out into the community and these little kids are looking up to students that look like them, that study in their same across the street and are really, they know each other. That's the beautiful idea that we wanted to put together, that someone who is successful can also look like us. They look like us. And I think that's the essence of it.
So when I was applying to all my colleges, so like, it's what you said. One of my reasons for going to college, I don't want to be poor anymore. Like, I want to make money. So I literally Google searched rich black people. Like, what are, I was like, what are the chances that this can actually be my reality? And it surprised me. I saw like what their net worths were and stuff like that weren't actors or entertainers and that like went the college route instead. And I was like, wow, I had no idea that this could actually be something because now I'm seeing people in power, people making money that are African American.
So Claudia, did you Google rich Latinas?
I did not. I think my motivation to go to college is because I want to help people. As a doctor, I want to, of course, come back to my community and give services. So, of course, one of the things that I was looking at was Doctors Without Borders, and that is definitely my ultimate goal, to become a doctor for Doctors Without Borders. My interest wasn't on money. My interest was kind of, that's so mean. My interest wasn't on kind of the money. I was more looking towards what I would do as a career.
So, okay, we're kind of the Ethan and Claudia of Seven Generation Games over here between me and Anne Maria.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I totally get that. It's, now, we're a for-profit company, yeah. But my thing is I want to sell tons of games and get them in tons of schools, yeah. Because I know that the games we make raise kids' math scores. And you can't employ people if you don't have money. I was at another youth summit talking to kids who are very into organizing the communities and protesting, and I'm not that so much. But I said, giving somebody a job, whether it's on an American Indian reservation or giving somebody their first internship out of South LA, can matter. So I think being about the money isn't always, I want money so I can buy my own private jet and put Anne Marie on the side of it. Sometimes you want money so you can make things happen in the world.
We'll be right back.
You know how sometimes you have an idea of how you want something done? Like how you would have your living room decorated, your closet organized, or whatever. But you just haven't had the time to get around to it because the way it is right now is passable and it works. But in the back of your head, you know it could be better someday. Well, for Spirit Lake the Game, someday is today. At Seven Generation Games, we've rolled out a major update of our very first game. We've kept the parts that were already great and enhanced those areas where we saw potential for enhancements, to give you a new version of the game that we know kids will love even more than the original. If you already have Spirit Lake, check your email for the update notification. If you don't have Spirit Lake, well, what are you waiting for? Get it today. Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm still Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne Maria DeMars. And we still have with us our three amazing guests from Manual Arts High School.
George Campos.
Claudia Jorge.
And Ethan Troop.
So let us know where you're going and how did you decide that was the school for you?
Well, it was kind of a struggle for me. I was choosing between USC, UCLA, and UC Berkeley. I finally settled on UC Berkeley. There are just like a lot of different variables you have to consider. So like USC, it may not have the greatest education, but their alumni network is amazing. So out of college, You can talk to people that have graduated and they're going to give you a job. Like USC just has that culture. But then also it's a private, so it's super expensive. So it's like $60,000 for tuition or something, plus housing. It's ridiculous. So then I look at that, like, am I really going to be able to afford this? Can I pay this off when I'm done? So I look at things like that. So then I started looking at state schools like Berkeley and UCLA. I wanted to do Berkeley over UCLA because I wanted to do business. UCLA doesn't have a business program. They have economics, but they don't really have business. So when I got to accept to UC Berkeley, it was like, oh, this is the one. The culture there, it's away from LA. Try something new, a new culture and just different area. And when I got it, I was like lost for words. Other times I was still like, yeah, USC, UCLA, you know, super excited. But Berkeley, I just had a different feeling when I got accepted. It was almost immediately that I knew I wanted to go there.
For me, I chose UC Berkeley. I had visited during my sophomore year because of a program named USC Upper Bound. And up to my senior year, I have been able to visit my UC campuses. For me, it was kind of a debate whether I wanted to stay in-state or out-of-state. So I was looking at more at the liberal arts schools, kind of like Bowdoin, Union, Wesleyan, all these other private schools, and UC Berkeley. I remember just visiting, feeling like it was my home. I remember when I got my acceptance letters for Berkeley, I had my counselor, her name's Maribel. She went to UC Berkeley. And in this moment, we opened the letter. We were in her office and my phone wouldn't load. So we opened the letter on her computer. We didn't even see the congratulations. We just saw the confetti and all you hear is this scream coming from her and me. And everyone just rushed. And I remember I couldn't stop crying. I talked to my counselors and it was a tough decision because it was in-state or out-of-state, and my counselor just told me, you know, the school that you cry for is the school where your heart is. Definitely, I learned from that. A couple days ago, I got the Dell Scholarship. Actually, yesterday, I got the Dell Scholarship.
Congratulations.
I think I'm not looking at student loans, so I think definitely I love the area for Berkeley. I love the campus, and I will be attending soon.
And I know how Latina moms are, so I bet your mom is really happy you're not going to be that far away.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When she saw UCLA, I remember her coming. She works until 12, so I only get to see my mom for like an hour a day. So I texted her a screenshot, and when she came home, I waited for her. Like, I was doing my homework. She saw me, and she came to hug me, like, with watery eyes, because every Latino family knows, okay, if my kid got into UCLA, then we got this, you know, but definitely, I can see their happiness, and I'm very happy to make them happy.
For me, coming Hispanic mom and dad, it was always the option that USC, UCLA, and Caltech were really the only possible schools I could go to because they were local. But coming up through the things we went through, and I really took on their budgets, and I loved city infrastructure, and I knew I wanted to go into this field of economics, and really just the best school in the country to study economics was Harvard. And I applied early, the whole time doubting myself, looking like, oh, I've worked as hard as I can over the last 4 years. My scores, I really increased them as much as I can. This is the best possible version of me that I could possibly show them. And on December 13th, last year, I got the acceptance notice when I was in the college center of my school, where they were having a celebration for all of the counselors and teachers who had helped us apply to college. So as we were wrapping up and I get that notification, I said, okay, wow, I need to sit down at one of these computers. And I saw that acceptance and I just stared at the computer for like 5 minutes before my college counselor walked behind me, Mr. Toe, and he said, have you shown anyone this? Like, I've been frozen here for the last 5 to 10 minutes just staring at the screen. And really, when I got in, I called my sister first. And then a few minutes later, I get a call from my mom who's crying. My sister hadn't told her that I got in, but she had told my mom that she had to call me. So I was like, is everything okay? Oh my God. And then, so I told her the news. From there, it's really hard for them to argue against going to Harvard.
She didn't say, ay, mio, es muy lejos.
There was a lot of that. Definitely was, but it's very difficult to argue against Harvard, especially coming from this Hispanic culture where really, my parents didn't know what the SAT was, what these tests were, what colleges are, what all the private schools. They were both immigrants, and really, Harvard is the dream, the idealized school. And I didn't care much for the name. I just knew they were the best economics program that I could get into. But to them, it was, okay, that's the goal. That is it. And they couldn't argue against not going.
So for Christmas, you're going to the Harvard bookstore and buying those Harvard mom and Harvard dad sweatshirts for your parents, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I already have some shirts that I got on my little banner, but my mom's in her photos in her phone is the acceptance letter that she screenshotted, because now she just shows anyone who asks.
And probably people that don't.
Honestly, I've told her not to, but I'm sure she does. Yes.
Well, and now here's the question. Do you love Dunkin' Donuts?
Oh, so it is incredibly popular out in Boston. I was there because of a program called College Match. They flew me out, and over the last spring break, I was at Harvard. And it's the equivalent of a Starbucks, and really on a much larger scale. Every other corner had Dunkin' Donuts, and there was a building that there was two Dunkin' Donuts in the same building.
And New Englanders are obsessed with Dunkin' Donuts. So if you aren't a Dunkin' Donuts guy, you will be soon.
I'm going to start to transition into what? Patriots, Celtics, all the teams, everything. My life will become.
Start dropping your R's, right?
Yes. Have it.
We'll be right back.
You can be too successful.
How so?
Our latest games have parents suggesting we get endorsements from YouTube celebrities, have professional gamers stream us on Twitch. They point out where we aren't the virtual reality level of Call of Duty.
Yet.
The point is, our games are so much more, well, game-like than the average educational games that people forget that what you really should be comparing these games to are math worksheets.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your kids sit down and do math workbooks for 20 minutes, if you can even get them to do that. Or you can let them play Fish Lake, which they'll probably ask you to let them keep playing after 20 minutes.
Or you can play yourself. You know you are never going to pick up one of those workbooks again for the rest of your life. Still, do you remember how to reduce fractions to lowest terms, multiply and divide fractions?
If not, play Fish Lake before Mia or Connor or Aiden or Joe gets home from school and asks for your help with their homework. Welcome to our third and final and most amazing segment of More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games with me, Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And me, Anne Maria DeMars.
And our three lovely, wonderful guests.
George Campos.
Claudia Jorge.
And Ethan Troop.
And so this is the tip portion of our podcast, where lots of times Anne Maria gives tips, whether people want them or not. But now we're turning it over to you. So this is the part where we put you guys on the spot. Take it away, Ethan.
Pass the mic to George. No. I guess a tip I would have, I would say, it's not where you go or where you're from. It's what you do or what you make of it, ultimately. Because you can go to anywhere. It's just what you do with it.
Here's my tip. Whatever you're trying to accomplish, whatever goal you're trying to reach, if you're doing what everyone else is doing, you're doing something wrong. You have to go out of your way to make sure that the path you're going on will get you where you want to be, and really forget about what everyone else is doing.
I kind of want to say, not a piece of advice, but just a quote. I'm very into rap, so I listen to a lot of like the motivational Eminem, and something that has always captured me and that I've thought of is a line from Michael Moore that says, "The quickest way to happiness is learning to be selfless. Ask more questions, talk about yourself less." And I think that would be my quote that just leave you guys on to think about it. And it's definitely nice to try to talk about myself less and ask more questions about people, just to learn more from them, get guidance. And definitely there's people out there that are having problems too. And maybe you could be the person that can be that change for that person that needs the help.
Would anybody like to give shout outs to their parents, teachers, anybody? Before Ian?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to my dad. He's a really influential person in my life. And also my college counselor, Alberto Urbina.
I think I'm very thankful too. I would like to give a shout out to, of course, my parents, my sister, my siblings. They've been my motivation. And my college counselors like Maribel, Veronica, Karina, everyone that has really helped me and has played a part in my life and has brought me to the point where I am.
Of course, my parents, my older sister, who really went through some things but got her life back together. My little brother, my little sister, hopefully they'll listen to this someday in the future. And Mr. Toe, the college counselor. Robin, the counselor who's been working with me very closely. And then two of the most influential teachers I've worked with are Mr. Abraham and Mr. Ferguson.
And I would like to say thank you to Mr. Toe, who's always been very supportive with us.
I just want to hear him go through all nine of his siblings.
Oh, yeah. Let's do like Stephen Colbert did with Dolly Parton. So can you name them all?
Yeah, I'll start from the top. Ian Kendall Joseph Troop, Samaj Alan Troop, Brianna Ariel Troop, Ethan Troop, Nolani Aida Troop, Caitlin Ashanti Troop, Aiden Cottrell Troop, Saida Ananda Troop, Tirza Amani Troop, and Makita Johns.
He'll just edit out that pause.
I was thinking of the order.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.